They called us deplorables. We're not gonna take it. They shut down our country. No, we ain't gonna take it. They say our thoughts are disinformation. This is our response, the Rob Carson Show.
It is the Rob Carson Show, and we forgot fascist. We got to add fascist into that. Joe Biden's calling us fascists, I guess. And he's also threatening us again. Yeah, he's threatening MAGA supporters. We're MAGA, ultra MAGA, right? We're ultra MAGA fascists, white supremacists. What else the hell are we? Deplorable. Not vegetarians. We're definitely not vegetarians. But all these things, I mean, we are the worst people in the history. Welcome to the worst people to ever walk the land on the United States of America. All of my glorious, fascist, deplorable, white supremacist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever the hell, phobic. All of you, oh, you're a wretched bunch. My God in heaven, I should put up a pirate flag above my show as we sail off because we're just so dirty, rotten, stinking, and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's what we are, I guess. So, gladly, I will wear all of those. I will sail with that pirate flag right below the American flag, the real American flag, and we'll start every voyage with singing the national anthem, and nobody will kneel. Nobody will kneel, and nobody will sit. I'm doubting no Brittany Griner is going to be kneeling during the national anthem when she finally gets out of jail, out of that Russian prison over there. So, I guess the big news of the day is that Mikhail Gorbachev died. For you Gen Z and millennials, he was in charge of what was the Soviet Union, and he had a big wine stain on his head. If you're lucky as a millennial or, you know what, you have that much information, probably what you heard about Gorbachev was, he saved the world. Oh, he was glorious. He was awesome. He ushered in freedom. He caused the fall of the Soviet Union. Of course, all of that was nonsense. He was the last leader of communist Russia, the USSR, United Soviet Socialist Republic. Socialist, by the way. United Soviet Socialist Republic, Bernie Sanders. I bet you Bernie was bummed out because he went there for his honeymoon. He went to the USSR for his honeymoon because, you know, it's so awesome over there in the poverty and the lines for food and all that stuff. But Mikhail Gorbachev. Actually, what happened was he was the last leader as the empire that left in its wake tens of millions of its own citizens that they murdered or starved. Other than that, I mean, great. Honestly, seriously, other than that, Soviet Union, we should usher that right in. Well, that's actually what the Democrats are trying to do. That's what Joe Biden talked about when Joe Obama said when he wanted to make America, he wanted to fundamentally transform America. Well, what he wanted to do is fundamentally transform America into what was the Soviet Union. Now, when I got out of college, the year that I got out of college, 1989, that's when the Berlin Wall fell. And that's when, which effectively ended the USSR. And then also the Tiananmen Square protest. And I like to say, with regard to what's happening in this country, do you want to be behind the wall pushing it over, like in Berlin? Or do you want to be tank fodder, like with Tiananmen Square? Because that's the choice that you're in right now. You can choose to take this filthy swamp, this deep state that is being exposed daily with its abuses and you producer patients, and you can say, you know what, let's knock the wall over. Let's knock the wall over so all people in America can live in freedom. And we can realize our potential. Nobody did that in the USSR. Unless you were a member of the party. And you are a regular member of the party. And you turned over your relatives to the authorities. And you shouted down disinformation and misinformation. I sound like Count Chocula. Or maybe the Count on Sesame Street. This is not working the way I wanted it. Anyway, so you can be either one of those. I choose not to be the cannon fodder. I'd rather be the person who pushes down the wall. That's what I hoped was going to happen on January the 6th. Not an overthrow of the government. Just, hey, slow down. Let's count the votes. Let's look at certifying this election without calling all the tens of thousands of affidavits of election cheating and all the reams of evidence and millions of minutes of video featuring vote stealing. How about we just slow down and maybe, no, they'd rather, have the FBI infiltrate the peaceful crowd and let people in and then claim they committed some sort of horrible crime and lock them into a gulag, just like Mikhail Gorbachev used to do. But you see, Mikhail Gorbachev took the helm of the Soviet Union as it was collapsing. And he had to respond to market demands. He had to respond to a people who had been beaten down, censored, starved for decades. And it proved that the Soviet Union was a paper tiger, not against its own people. It had still had the capacity to jail and murder everybody that they wanted to in the Soviet Union. Oddly enough, Mikhail Gorbachev, both of his grandfathers were sent off to gulags where they died. Most people would be like, huh, I really want to turn this thing around. Man, we ought to overthrow this communist thing. But he didn't. He towed the party line. He went. He started these incremental, I guess, changes, market changes. They called it, Stolichnaya? No, was it Stolichnaya? Chernobyl? No. It was, anyway, he was ushering, and I know I have the word. It's right there on the tip of my brain. But Glasnost is one of the things. And so he's going to allow some market changes to the USSR. Like you could go to, they might open a McDonald's and you could get a Big Mac for, the price of 3 months' salary. Or you could buy a pair of blue jeans for 2 years' salary. That kind of market stuff. And I remember as this kid right out of college and right before the USSR fell, there was this guy on the radio called Rush Limbaugh. And I was like, how did Rush Limbaugh, a pretty interesting guy. I write comedy for these other networks. And I wonder if old Rush Limbaugh would run some of my comedy. And so I contacted Kit Carson and Johnny Donovan. And we started making fun of Democrats. And, the rest is history. But Rush used to have this thing called a Gorbasm. Because the left in this country loves communists. They still do. They still did, and they still do. And at any time, a communist leader like Che Guevara, who is a homophobe, murdered gay people, terrorist, torturer, the whole deal. But on college campuses, they wear these Che Guevara shirts, and because he's handsome, he's got his beret on. They didn't get him from the feet down. He was standing on a bunch of skulls of people he murdered. But anyway, so the left has always had this aversion for its dictators. It's kind of like some of these crazy women who hook up with mass murderers in prison. I wish I were joking, but I'm not. It's really similar to that. It's really, really similar. I know he's Charles Manson. I know he ordered the murder of all those people, but he's so dreamy. He's dreamy! So that's what the American media was doing to Mikhail Gorbachev when Gorbachev was only at the helm of the already sinking ship. But I wanted to play this because I know you miss his voice. I know I miss his voice. But this is Rush Limbaugh, and he taught me. This is where I was in. I was a late stage Rush baby, still certainly abortable according to Democrats. I probably could still be aborted according to Democrats. But I remember I was kind of getting a feel for real conservatism, and I went to see Mikhail Gorbachev. He did a speech after the USSR fell in Fulton, Missouri. I'll share that in a little bit. But this is Rush. This is one of the many wonderful bits that he did that made a lot of sense. And I do believe also may have precipitated the fall, as well as Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, of the former USSR.
Mikhail Gorbachev has now entered the world economic question with his own point of view, my friends. Thus, it is time for a Gorbasm.
Oh,
the
voice.
World is safe that he, Gorbachev, has arrived. The truth be known, Gorbachev was the world's first messiah.
Yeah.
Obama is number two.
Yeah, the left just passed over Jesus. This is new from Jim Goss, a little tribute on the passing of Mikhail Gorbachev. Does me done ya.
Mikhail, hostile at first and then. You finally cracked a smile, cracked a smile.
Is that Ronald Reagan?
Mikhail.
Yes.
Reviled because with me he went the extra mile, extra mile.
Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
I played you, I played you, I played you. I got the upper hand.
Yeah, he lived longer,
well,
too.
It was just like I'd planned. I walked away in Reykjavik so you'd understand.
Oh, he did, man. He dropped the mic.
Cold War, no more. We got it done like no one had before. Joe Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden.
President Doofy.
No match for Vladimir.
Made a poopy.
I know he'd hate to hear that you and me, we changed the world and we did it in style.
I love it.
My Mikhail.
There you go. Jim Gossett, two S's with two T's, JimGossettComedy.com. I will put that up on my Rumble channel later today, this whole opening monologue, and also that song. Just go to Rumble.com, Rob Carson Show. Coming up, I do have a mea culpa. I do believe that Joe Biden and Democrats in this country are making jobs. They are creating jobs. And I would encourage you, if you are a millennial, and by the way, the millennials, according to a new study, poorest generation ever. Listen up, because I was wrong. Joe Biden and Democrats around the country are creating jobs. And if you want to be part of this incredible growing industry, you do not want to leave your radio. Here's the number, 800-922-6680. This is the Rob Carson Show.
There's only one Rob Carson on the radio.
Oh, thank God.
It's the Rob Carson Show.
I added some new bumper music. Gotta keep it fresh. There you go. That's not new. It's like 30 years old, as Peter Gabriel. Okay, so 1992 was... It was May 6th of 1992. I went to see this. I went to this speech at the America's National Churchill Museum with this Fulton, Missouri. There's a school there, Westminster College. And there were 20,000 people there. And I remember going there, getting there early, because, yeah, it was a part radio station thing. And they had a segment of the Berlin Wall, which, of course, Mikhail Gorbachev didn't have a problem with. He was like, yeah, no, that's fine, that's fine. But, you know, if we can, you know, let McDonald's operate here and charge, you know, they can charge a year's worth of salary for a Big Mac and fries, then that'll mean that we are... Perestroika was the word I was looking for. Perestroika. And it was this new glasnost. It was this new era of openness in the Soviet Union by the guy who was just holding on to power by a thread, you know, while store shelves were empty and people couldn't get cars. And it was... Wait, hold on. What's going on in America? Okay, anyway, so we'll move on. I went to see the speech, and man, I'm going to tell you, and I don't think it was because I was like in my mid-20s, like 25 years old, but God, with the most boring snooze fest, the most boring snooze fest you could possibly imagine. Imagine when you're 7 years old, and your mom and dad took you to see your great aunt Blanche at the nursing home, and you had to sit there for 2 hours on the couch covered with plastic and the bowl of candy, that little curly Q candy, that wavy candy, and all you had to entertain yourself was just that hard, awful, stale, wavy candy, and your mom and dad would make you sit there with Aunt Blanche rambling on, you know, saying things like, you know, when I was a kid, I was the only white kid at an all-black swimming pool. Now, actually, it was Joe Biden. Very similar. But I'll get to that. But he was the most boring speech ever. Just putrid. And, you know, and I think because it was Westminster, Maryland, Westminster College, everybody was going there because, you know, Gorbachev was his savior. And I didn't really understand at that point how important Ronald Reagan was and Maggie Thatcher was with regard to the Soviet Union. But by saying things like, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, you think that didn't go over to the other side of the wall? You think that didn't get things buzzing over there? You bet your butt it did. They tried the same thing in China. And they had the same kind of feeling, and they got out there and they protested, and they didn't get up on the wall, but they stood outside of Tiananmen, or in Tiananmen Square, outside the Forbidden City, and the lights went out, and they just murdered everybody. So there you go. There's a little history lesson for y'all. Little history lesson. Now, I am going to tell you right now, it's a mea culpa for me, because I've been saying to people that, and truthfully, by the way, that the reason why the unemployment rate is so long is or so low is because so many people have to go to work now to survive. I was the first person to say that the reason why people are adding jobs and going to work is because they're having to come out of retirement. They're having to take a second and third job to pay the bills. This is undisputed. Absolutely undisputed. And there are 11 million jobs open in the country. You know why? Because extending unemployment benefits, because of PPE and all that stuff. We had a de facto $15 minimum wage. A de facto $15 minimum wage. You go to Walmart right now where I live, you're going to make $15 to $17 an hour to start. Small businesses can't compete with that. So they're still running ads for $8 an hour, $7 an hour, $7.35, which is the national average. And they can't get people to work for it. So what do you think is going to happen to those businesses? But I was wrong. There's something big. It's booming. It's starting in Philadelphia. It's spreading across the country. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are a young person and you need a job because of Democrats' anti-police laws, you may have a future in grave digging.
Preparing their fourth plot of the day, the grave diggers at Friends Southwestern Burial Ground in Upper Darby can hardly keep up.
Have you thought of digging yourself out of that financial hole?
Up with demand. Their business is tied directly to Philadelphia's homicide rate. And as you can see by the roses...
It's like in the old-timey days when people would come into the old western town and the mortuary director would come out there and just measure them from head to toe just in case they got murdered by somebody.
Rows of freshly dug graves, business is booming. Cemetery workers say 90% of these new graves are victims of violence.
I got chills because it's like I've been here a lot of times, either supporting people or partaking in...
Everything's pushing up daisies, or everything's coming up roses.
Funeral service.
Mustafa Ali has been to this cemetery that caters to Muslim burials too many times to count.
I partook in his service, you know, with the washing of the body.
From the childhood friend's grave who was gunned down back in January.
No, it's just another person of color.
To the seemingly endless
number. Those black lives don't matter, according to Democrats.
Number of other friends and family members he's lost.
Bruce Chenault, Stephon Wilson, Shakira Pittman.
Ali.
All those white kids. All those, oh, never mind. No, inner city kids where black-on-black violence is 13 times the national average. The murder rate.
Could have been one of those names, admitting he was once part of the city's gun violence problem. At 19, he did 6 years in prison for a firearms charge. A year later, he was shot 10 times and almost died.
All these graves are teenagers.
Yeah, it's a lot of 15, 16, 17-year-olds out here, yeah. People that didn't even live to see 18.
And that's where it gets serious. And that's where it gets serious. In places like Baltimore, you see a 13-year-old black kid, young man. What do you suppose his chances of making it to his 18th birthday are? Probably not so good. And if he does make it, he's probably going to end up in prison. He's going to end up being part of the prison pipeline. In cities where the abortion rate is at least 40% for children of color, and you heard about the murder rate earlier. But you know, that means job creation. There you go. There you go, Democrats. Good job creating the jobs that America's used to not want, but now they are plentiful. And chances are, you know, you'll be able to work with friends. Friends that you knew that got murdered. There you go. You'll be burying them, but you'll at least get to work with them. On the way, Joe Biden goes after the police defunding, even though he was totally down with defunding it. He wants to refund it. I think we need a refund on Joe Biden. That's coming up. You're listening to The Rob Carson Show. So Mikhail Gorbachev has passed away. He was 91 or 92, depending on who you believe. He was a communist. You know, he was a communist. He was completely down with communist ideology, and he just happened to be there when it collapsed. And, you know, he threw some crumbs to his compatriots, and he thought that maybe this glasnost, perestroika, dosmidanya, Chernobyl would turn things around. But it ended up just kind of giving people a taste of what they really wanted, which was freedom. And then they said, you know, we don't need you, Gorbachev. Otherwise, they would have kept him, right? They would have said, hey, you know what? Let's just go ahead and keep Gorbachev in charge here because he's so awesome and everything, and he's ushered in all this change. And now they got rid of him. And then he lived the rest of his life making bleep tons of money doing speeches for liberal groups, I'm assuming. So, yeah, that's about what he did. That's about what he did. Oh, Joe Biden has picked an associate of Lois Lerner to head the expansion of the IRS. This is what they're going to do to you. Yeah, one of the Lois Lerner lackeys from the Obama-era IRS, this is according to Gateway Pundit, Nicole Flax, who recently served as the deputy commissioner in charge of the IRS Large Business and International Division, has been in the IRS since 2008. She will be leading the creation of a new centralized office for implementation of the IRS-related provisions that we are going to start outlining. Oh, sorry, I slipped into another voice there. Why the hell did that happen? Outlined in the boondoggle, famously named the Inflation Reduction Act. Yeah. Yuppers, yuppers, yuppers. Oh, this is also interesting before we get into Joe Biden's appearance yesterday in Philadelphia. Or not. Was he in Scranton? What the hell? Scranton, Philadelphia. He's going to be in Philadelphia tomorrow night. He's going to be there where they signed the Declaration of Independence, which is a slap in the founders' faces. He's going to declare war on us, by the way, tomorrow. I just want you to know that's what it's all about. It's about declaring war on you and me. Democrat John Fetterman has declined an early September debate against Mehmet Oz in the Pennsylvania U.S. Senate race, citing recovery from a recent stroke. Okay, let me explain something to you. If you're not able to physically or mentally do a debate, you're not physically or mentally able to be a senator. Becoming a senator is not therapy. It's not mental or physical therapy. Becoming a senator, you have to have your faculties in order. If you had a stroke, this should disqualify you from running. I'm absolutely serious. 100%. 100%. Brain don't work. Can't do appearances, but he can be a senator. Democrats want him to be a senator because they love brain-addled people who do what they say. It's kind of funny that way. I'm eager to put my record and my values up against Dr. Oz's any day of the week. As I recover from this stroke and improve my auditory processing and speech, can't be a senator, I look forward to continuing to meet with the people of Pennsylvania, but not saying anything to them. On Tuesday, the Oz campaign, he's a doctor, you know, put a list of concessions for the debate and literally said, hey, we want to have debates. We will, you know, you could do a standby, allowing you to do bathroom breaks, allowing you to have notes on hand, along with an earpiece. And what did he say? Fetterman said the list of concessions basically made it abundantly clear they think it is funny to mock a stroke survivor. My recovery may be a joke to Dr. Oz and his team, but it's real for me. Well, yeah, go recover. Do something else. You shouldn't be a senator. Newt Gingrich is on, I think it was on Tucker's show last night. He says there's no chance that Fetterman's going to win. We'll see. We'll see. Oh, did you know my friend Doug Mastriano's in front in Pennsylvania? He's up by 3, which means he's up by 13. That's the way it works with polling and Republicans. Thought you should know that. Here is Joe Biden yesterday. He wants to refund the police because he has not said a thing about defunding the police. Didn't say a damn thing while the country was burning in the summer of 2020, where hundreds, possibly thousands of police officers were injured, sometimes lifelong injuries by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Joe Biden and the Democrat Party didn't say a darn thing. Unless they were going to bail out the people who did it. But here was old Joe Biden yesterday. He's had a come to Jesus moment because the election's coming up. This isn't going to work, by the way.
When it comes to public safety in this nation, the answer is not defund the police. It's fund the police.
Why didn't you say that 2 years ago when they were screaming defund the police? Didn't say a damn thing.
Fund the police.
And I really think, and I'll just be honest. Remember when Kamala Harris went to the football game? And they introduced her, the stands were empty, and yet the crowd noise was gigantic. If you look at this rally, he was in a high school gymnasium, about a fourth full. I swear they juiced the audio. They juiced the audio.
We expect them to do everything. We expect them to be protect us, to be psychologists, and to be sociologists.
I just went wandering off with a teleprompter.
We expect you to do everything. I'm not joking.
I'm not joking. I said a teleprompter.
Everything. You realize more police officers are killed dealing with domestic violence than anything else?
What about ambushes and injury and murder from people who hate the police because the left said bleep the police and pigs in a blanket fry them like bacon?
Do you realize that? The point is,
not a joke.
We ask so much of you. So much of you.
Well, President Doofy was quiet when all this was happening.
Fuck it up. Defunding the police has to happen. We need to defund the police.
Mayor Eric Garcetti saying, take some of the money from policing, about $150 million.
I applaud Eric Garcetti for doing what he's done.
Not only do we need to disinvest in police, but we need to completely dismantle the Minneapolis.
Hello, Mr. President Doofy. Hello, is the microphone on? Can you hear this? Why didn't you say anything?
Police department.
So, yes, defund your butts. Defund you.
Yes.
It'd take a lot of defunding to defund your butt, Missy.
I support the reallocation of resources from NYPD.
We will be moving funding from the NYPD to youth initiatives and social service.
Nobody believes you, particularly those in law enforcement. Nobody believes you. Everybody thinks you're a joke. You can rant and rave all you want at stupid rallies where the crowd is juiced, but everybody knows the Democrat Party screwed the country.
They are talking about reducing the allocation of resources to that department, and I think every single city in this country ought to be thinking about the same thing.
Yes,
did you hear the story about the gravediggers in Philadelphia? Gangbuster, business and the whole deal. Did you hear about that? There's that. Yeah, I like to use the analogy that Democrats have used the black population for decades. And what they do is they promise that things are going to get better and things are going to get better. We're going to give you this. We're going to give you that. We're going to give you free phone. We're going to give you all this, all that, all this. And then the election happens. And the next day, the Democrat Party gets out of bed, walks over, puts some money on the dresser and leaves. That's what Joe Biden wants to do with the police now, but they're not going to fall for it.
I support the defund movement. I'm for responsible reallocation of resources.
And look where we are now. And look where we are now. And then, of course, President Doofy started fumbling and bumbling and telling stupid stories, racist stories about when he was a kid. Here's one where he said basically that all black kids can play basketball.
If I can just interject for a moment. My deceased son, Bo, he was the attorney general of the state of Delaware. And what he used to do is go down on the east side, what's called the bucket. Highest.
By the way, he also said that if you don't vote for him, you ain't black. He said that to black people.
Crime rate in the country. There's a place where I was the only white guy that worked as a lifeguard.
There's a corn pop, and he used to sharpen the razor, and he'd run his hands up and down my legs, and then he'd give me a little back rub. Okay, I went too far.
Down in that area, on the east side. And you know where you can always tell where the best basketball in the state is, and
where
the best basketball in the city is.
Yeah.
It's where everybody shows up.
It's where everybody shows up is where it is, in the place there. Yeah. Oh, and then he campaigned for what is it, Shapiro, the guy running again, running for governor against my friend Doug Mastriano and John Fetterman. But he messed up which offices they were running for.
Please, please elect the attorney general of the Senate.
Now, Fetterman's guy running for the Senate.
Elect that big old boy to be governor.
Yeah, the big old boy who looks a lot like Shrek. That's John Fetterman. He's running for Senate.
Elect that big old boy to be governor.
Yeah. Big old boy. You betcha. Yeah. Oh, and then he threatened us. Now, you know that he's been calling us fascists, and he's been calling us this and that, and Lindsey Graham said if they try to prosecute Donald Trump, there'll be riots in the street. And hey, I don't think he's far from the truth. I think people are really ticked off. I'm not encouraging it. I'm just facing the facts here. That the left went out and they burned down crap because George Floyd was killed. They used it as an excuse for communists to do what communists do, and that is destroy our history, burn our cities, create division, the whole deal. But here is Joe Biden. He's literally threatening you and me. He's basically saying if you try to take up arms, if you try to protest too much, he has much bigger weapons at his disposal.
And for those brave right-wing Americans who say it's all about keeping Americans independent and safe, if you want to fight against the country, you need an F-15.
There you go. That is a threat. That is a threat. He is saying, if you try anything, we will send the planes in.
America, you're keeping Americans independent and safe. If you want to fight against the country, you need an F-15. You need something a little more than a gun.
Now, he also said yesterday that deer don't wear Kevlar vests. That's a sophomoric anti-gun argument from the left. It comes right out of the faculty lounge. It's stupid. The Second Amendment exists so average Americans could have weapons of war, including AR-15s. They're not in the Constitution! Well, I know, but you see, there were weapons on that way. They were on the radar at that time, and the government said, yeah, the Second Amendment exists, not for hunting and fishing, not for target practice, from protecting you from the government. That's indisputable. Here is Mr. Biden, President Doofy, last year issuing the same threat during a speech about gun control, of all things.
Enough rogue gun dealers feel like they can get away with selling guns to people who aren't legally allowed to own them. And I might add, the Second Amendment from the day it was passed limited the type of people who could own a gun. And what type of weapon?
The type of people that could own a gun? No, it didn't. You're high.
You could own. You couldn't buy a cannon.
Well, you can't
say the blood of patriots, you know, and all the stuff about how we're going to have.
We the people and all that stuff. We're starting a shoe, hat, airplane.
Move against the government. Well, the tree of liberty is not water with the blood of patriots. What's happened is that there are never been. If you wanted to think you need to have weapons to take on the government.
Uh-huh.
You need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons.
Oh, listen to that again. Listen to what he's saying to you.
The patriots, what's happened is that there are never been, if you wanted to think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons.
That kind of skews towards the Tiananmen Square argument that I talked about earlier versus the Berlin Wall argument that I talked about earlier.
The point is that there's always been the ability to rationally limit the type of weapon that can be owned and who can own it.
Yeah, and if you try to get those, we will either nuke or send an F-15 to your house to kill you and your family. Okay, next question. Let's take a break. Here's the number if you want to call in. James, you hold on. You'll be up first. 800-922-6680. This is the Rob Carson Show.
If you're down with trigger warnings, you might want to listen to something else. It's the Rob Carson Show.
Those who say the blood of patriots, you know, and all the stuff about how we're going to have to move against the government. Well, the tree of liberty is not water with the blood of patriots. What's happened is that there are never been, if you wanted to think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons.
And President has some trouble with famous lines from the founding documents, probably because, you know, he uses them as toilet paper, so he doesn't really read them.
Every vote matters tomorrow. The most important vote to make sure there's not going to be any problem is that you send back Sheila Jackson Lee as the nominee without any question. That's the most important. Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I want to thank you all.
That is the wrong soundbite. Here's the right one.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the thing.
Yeah, he probably. When he was in elementary school, he goes, "I pledge allegiance to the flag of the thing," and then the shoe had airplane and. James in Glen Burnie, Maryland, is on the phone. Hello there, James. What's up today?
Hey, Ron, how are you doing today? It's good to talk to you.
It's Rob, actually, but go ahead.
Rob, sorry, long day. I love how desperate he has gotten. He's throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks, trying to get all these uninformed voters to vote come this November. How much he was for something, now he's for something, he was against something. Like, for instance, this tuition redistribution, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
He comes into the Senate, even during Bill Clinton and Bush, he voted against forgiveness.
Yeah.
But now he's all for it, knowing that if he doesn't throw anything, he's going to lose everything.
This is a classic example of changing your tune to get elected, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to screw you over. He did the same thing on the campaign trail. He was at one time telling people, "Oh yeah, I'm a energy candidate. I'm going to take care of you." Then at the other campaign rallies, "I'm going to get rid of fossil fuels." What happened when he got elected? He screwed over the people involved in the fossil fuel industry and destroyed our economy and our energy independence. That's how Democrats roll. Why don't you get that phone call, James? Thanks for the phone call. I do appreciate it. Thank you for checking in. Yeah. Oh, and this is it, you know, because we are a terrorist, right? I mean, we're terrorists. We are deplorables. We're all of this and that. And these are words of war. I mentioned this, and these are words that are chosen deliberately by the left. And I had a story, I'll have to dig it up, but I think it was in New York, a GOP office was vandalized after Joe Biden said those words of the Republican Party, that we are fascists, when the opposite is true. Now you've got groups on the left that are called Antifa, they're anti-fascists. They are fascists! That's like, you know, saying you're members of Weight Watchers and really, actually, you're dining at the Old Country Buffet every night. Is that still around? I don't even know. You know, I'm definitely down with healthy eating and then eating at whatever buffet every night. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But that's how Democrats do it. They think it works. It works in the Soviet Union because you can get away with lying. Like, it worked very well. You could get away with lying. And if somebody disagreed with you, you'd call it disinformation and lock them up, which is kind of what they're trying to do here in our country. This is Kurt Bardella of MSNBC talking about how we are a bunch of terrorists.
Well, I think President Joe Biden's been doing his job, honestly. Remember, he inherited the...
Now, listen to the list of achievements that involve spending your money on crap.
...presidency during a massive streak of uncertainty because of the COVID pandemic that also created a lot of economic uncertainty.
Yeah.
Where Joe Biden has been over the last year and a half, he's been getting stuff done. And we're coming off of a historic sequence of events where we've gotten bipartisan gun reform done.
Government reform, what the hell that means? That's spending.
We've gotten infrastructure done.
More spending.
We've gotten the CHIPS bill done.
That's $200 billion of spending.
We've gotten the Inflation Reduction Act done.
More spending. Had nothing to do with inflation at all. It's just about jackbooted thugs at the IRS.
Joe Biden has been doing his job, and now that the legislative successes have piled up, he can now turn his focus...
What are the other successes?
...to the broader conversation that many of us have been having about the health of democracy.
Yeah.
And let's be very...
Now, that's what this... The war speech is going to be tomorrow night.
Clear here. The Republican Party, the MAGA Republicans, are a domestic terrorist cell operating in America.
There you go. Words of war. Keep your powder dry, kids. Don't overreact, but just be ready. Let's take a break. You're listening to The Rob Carson Show.
Rush Limbaugh shared his comedy for years. Now you'll hear it here. It's the Rob Carson Show.
All right, so we got hour number two of the Rob Carson Show right ahead. It looks like millennials are kind of screwed financially. And Gen Z may be taking a turn away from feminism. I'll explain. And also Mega Hulk. It's not Mega Hulk. It's Ultra Mega Hulk. Anyway. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. In case you missed it, Mikhail Gorbachev, who is a failed political leader, a failed communist, who was at the helm of the Soviet Union when it fell, somehow is being credited with freeing the Soviet Union, even though they didn't retain him as the leader, because he was a communist.
Mikhail, hostile at first, and then you finally cracked a smile. Cracked a smile.
Is that Ronald Reagan?
Mikhail.
Yeah.
Reva. reviled, because with me he went the extra mile, extra mile. I played you, I played you, I played you.
Big time.
I got the upper hand. Well, it was just like I'd planned. I walked away in Reykjavik so you'd understand.
Did.
Cold War, no more. We got it done like no one had before. Joe Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden, no match for Vladimir. I know he'd hate to hear that you and me, we changed the world and we did it in style.
Without firing a shot.
My Mikhail.
There you go. That is from Jim Gossett. By the way, he did a terrific show last Saturday night in Atlanta. It was sold out, and a lot of people were talking about the radio show, and I heard some samples of his show. It's really good. He does a great stand-up routine, and then he incorporates all of the songs that we do together and his own original material, and really, really good. And we hope to take the show on the road with me on stage, him on stage, possibly my buddy who does the great Donald Trump impression, and his name is Sean Farish, among others. So we're working on it. We're working on it. But we would love to see you. We would love to meet you and entertain you on stage. So there was some talk about this former FBI official, Timothy Thibault, who is facing he was faced multiple whistleblower allegations, responded Tuesday to media reports that he left the bureau, saying in a statement through his legal counsel he voluntarily retired from his job and denied some of the allegations against him. This will be proven in a court of law when hopefully heads roll at the FBI. And don't let any of this nonsense. They're trying to distract. They said, oh, yeah, they laid out some of the confidential documents on the floor, and they shared with the media, the FBI, active investigation. They're pleading their case to the public. They shouldn't be worried about pleading their case to the public. But that's what they did, and they laid out some select documents, and Adam Schiff was, oh, there's the evidence of the, wait a minute, didn't we say it was nuclear? He was going to threat a nuclear. Yeah, the nuclear threat that he was going to. Well, there was something in there. It was bad. And apparently they also said that he has a carbon copy of the desk in the Oval Office. The Resolute Desk is what it's called. And I'm not sure if he was really all that authentic with the recreation of it. I think he probably didn't include the stains left there by the Clintons. But anyway, apparently, he has an identical Resolute Desk, I guess. He keeps in his bedroom or something. And there was some confidential information in there. Okay. Chuck Grassley from Iowa, that's where I'm from, the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, brought the political bias allegation to light in May. In one instance, Grassley noted that Thibault, used Twitter to reflect a post from a Never Trump Lincoln project that read, Donald Trump is a psychologically broken, embittered, and deeply unhappy man. Yeah, he's a centrist. In another instance, Thibault allegedly responded to a tweet to Catholic priest Frank Pavone and Trump to focus on the pedophiles after Pavone criticized the impeachment of Trump and praised the former president's pro-life stance. Thibault's legal statement noted that he is fully cooperating with the Hatch Act investigation and expects to be fully exonerated. I believe that the Trump, they were fully cooperating as well, but that didn't stop him from kicking down the doors. Thibault noting that whistleblowers claim verified and verifiable derogatory information on Hunter Biden was falsely labeled as disinformation. He was in charge of that, according to the letter from Chuck Grassley. And he was also in charge of the 2020 election investigation. Thibault and others also subsequently attempted to improperly mark the matter in FBI systems so that it could not be opened in the future. That's Hunter Biden's laptop. His legal counsel is saying he was not involved in any decisions related to the laptop. That may be an issue in the investigation, and he did not seek to close the investigation. Sure, yeah, whatever. The whistleblower, one of the whistleblowers, alleged that, according to Jordan, that Thibault pressured agents to categorize cases as domestic violent extremists. He was part of that, too, calling you and me domestic violent extremists and saying that we're the biggest threat to our security, and that was a lie. They moved on. Now they're just calling us fascists. In an effort to bolster case numbers, which could feed a narrative perpetrated by the Biden administration that domestic violent extremism is America's greatest threat. It's terrible. This is something I saw online this morning put together. It has a little music behind it. Don't let it be a distraction. This is Representative James Comer, who we featured yesterday, talking about the House of Cards in Washington, D.C. that is about to collapse on the FBI because whistleblowers.
We do praise whistleblowers, especially on the House Oversight Committee. And I can tell you, we're meeting with dozens of whistleblowers from some of the top law enforcement agencies, not just the FBI, but also Border Patrol. But one thing that's apparent with these whistleblowers, they fear retaliation. And it's really sad when the whistleblowers from our law enforcement community fear being retaliated by this politicized Biden administration. So what we've done on the House Oversight Committee, along with the Judiciary Committee and Oversight and the Energy and Commerce Committee, we've also requested correspondence between Facebook and the FBI, as well as between Facebook and the Democrat National Committee, because we have pretty good information that would lead me to believe that not only did the FBI communicate with Zuckerberg, but also the Democrat National Committee followed up with Zuckerberg after the FBI gave him that warning. So we believe this was a coordinated effort.
Mikhail Gorbachev, this may have put him over the edge. He's like, why couldn't I have done this in Soviet Union to keep everyone quiet? Soviet Union would still be around.
By the Biden campaign to do everything in their ability to spook Facebook to censor conservatives, especially the Hunter Biden story, which we now know was one.
I wonder if he ever tried one of those Mr. Clean magic erasers on his forehead, because they work on everything else.
100% true.
Congressman, did I hear you correctly that there are dozens of whistleblowers? Can you elaborate on that?
Right, of course, it's Sean Hannity.
From the FBI, because we know Senator Grassley and Johnson and Congressman Jordan have said from the FBI specifically.
Dozens of whistleblowers from Border Patrol, from FBI, from Homeland Security. We've got a problem with the law enforcement community in this Biden administration. I believe that.
And the cabal between the Democrat Party, the mainstream media, and big social media. A lot of people are going to be exposed for their Soviet-era collaboration with the government.
Hopeful that the Republicans will retake the majority and there will finally be oversight, and this administration will finally be held accountable for the mistakes they're making at the border and the mistakes they're making with the FBI. You know, most FBI agents are good people. They have pride, as they should, in their agency.
Keep whistling.
But the American people are losing confidence in the FBI quicker than the Democrats can print money in Washington right now. And that's disturbing to the incredible FBI agents, and they're wanting to talk to members of Congress.
Keep it coming. Keep it coming. Cash Patel's a friend of the radio program. He's been on, and he was one of the only people whose name was not redacted in the affidavit to get the search warrant to raid Mar-a-Lago, kind of like the FBI getting that search warrant. Four times, actually, went to a FISA court and used the dossier, which was paid for literally by the FBI, the Hillary Clinton campaign, and the Democrat Party, to obtain a search warrant of Trump's campaign. One of the search warrants, or one of the FISA applications, the court laughed him out. They said, oh, please. I heard that last night. Here's Cash Patel talking about the FBI and Mar-a-Lago and not being redacted.
Well, the current FBI director, Chris Wray, was the FBI director when we ran the Russiagate investigation. And he had the opportunity then to expose all the corruption at the FBI, and he failed. No. And he's been covering up since. Look, we said since the beginning, we got out 60% of the documents for the Russiagate investigation. 40% remained. President Trump declassified those specific documents. And this entire raid on his house, I believe, was to prevent the disclosure disclosure now that the government gangsters are back in charge of their corrupt activities from Russiagate on down. Because now that they have an open FBI counterintelligence investigation, they will shield any release of documents.
Yep.
Because they will say we have an open investigation. Congress has a lot of work to do, and I'm glad whistleblowers are coming forward. They need to be doing so in droves.
Now, the FBI went at great lengths to mark up this affidavit, every page and every agent's name on it, but they left Kash Patel's name on there on purpose because they're complete D-words. Here's Kash Patel talking about that.
As a former national security prosecutor and Peter Strzok, as a counterintelligence head agent, knows that American citizens' names and search warrants are supposed to be redacted. This DOJ, with the same leadership that authorized the Russiagate, is now back in charge, had gone in to intentionally lift a redaction of just my name.
I wonder what he was looking for. Wonder what they were looking for.
And then redact the next seven consecutive pages. It was totally for political purposes. They don't care about the threats to my life, the racist message, and the hatred I see every day now because they are publicly advertising for me to fail, to go to jail, and to be harmed. And here's another thing. The FBI did this after a 10-month investigation into death threats from the January 6th subpoena committee on me, and on Friday, the same day they issued the affidavit, is the same day they ended the investigation saying, even though they had credible evidence, we could go no further.
Isn't that interesting how that happens, how that FBI operates? Don't be distracted. Don't be distracted. They've been doing this nonsense for 7 years, and this instance is not any different. It's only bigger and more egregious and more unconstitutional and more criminal. Let's take a break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show.
Joe Biden's been asleep for years.
This has to be a wake-up call and shine a bright spotlight on anything like this behavior anywhere.
It's the Rob Carson Show.
So the FBI, they're distracting. They put up some pictures, apparently, of the confidential documents at Mar-a-Lago. I don't think they showed Melania's wardrobe that they rifled through and left a mess, adding another indignity to the raid of a former president, unprecedented in our history. Hell is coming, and we're coming with it, regardless of what the FBI, who now we know is rotten from the head up. They're going to try and do a lot of things, but they've been caught. They know the writing is on the wall. I think it's spray painted. I think maybe just like Antifa did to America's cities a couple years ago. Let's go to Homer in Rising Sun, Maryland. Hello there, Homer. Welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What's going on?
Hey, Rob.
What?
Hey, listen.
But
I don't forget things. When the Clintons were in office, they had a computer that was nicknamed Big Brother. Okay. And in that computer, they put raw FBI files, 1,500 of them in there.
Yep.
And they were all on Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the Clintons wouldn't even consider blackmailing or abusing the Republicans after the FBI gave them all this personal information.
Yeah, the FBI, it's very clear that the FBI, even since its inception, has had a gigantic political bent toward those who are not in power. This started when it originally started with Woodrow Wilson, and the last 30 years, I think we can all say, including with the Clintons, the FBI has leaned way left and has gone after the conservatives. The IRS has done the same thing with Lois Lerner's tenure there. So I don't think there's any doubt. And as always, as my good friend Chris Plant says, if liberals didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards at all. So you know what I'm saying, Homer. Those things get brushed under the rug. Hillary Clinton's server, bleach bidding all of the hard drives, destroying mobile phones and computers. That's no big deal. All Hillary has to do, literally, she could wave her hand and say, all of those emails, and this is what she did, all of those emails were about my daughter's wedding or yoga. To which I say, do you expect us to believe you do yoga? Sure. But, you know, the same thing Donald Trump, he could easily and most probably did say, because he was the commander in chief, that these documents are no longer classified. He has the right to do it. But there's a lot of lefties in the National Archives, a lot of lefties in the FBI, and the FBI has been going after Donald Trump for 7 years, and they thought this was the pièce de résistance. If they could bring a raid so big that the American people would look at the reputation of the FBI that most of us had maybe a couple months ago, but don't anymore, that they could just do a raid with all these, and just think, oh, man, Trump must have done something really bad for the good and decent FBI to do something like that. And what we're discovering is that it was a banana republic operation with a blanket search warrant that is not allowed here because of the Fourth Amendment. And Donald Trump's going to sue him, and the FBI is going to be taken apart. Go ahead, Homer.
Well, I tell you, when Herbert Hoover set up the FBI, the first thing he did was every upcoming politician, he had his boys go out and get the goods on him.
Yeah.
So he could wield some control.
Yeah.
That started from the beginning. Herbert Hoover did all that stuff.
I know. Yeah, and they also went after Martin Luther King Jr. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Well, yeah, they went right after
him. I'm an old dude, man. I've got a long memory of what the FBI's been up to.
Well, you're just the opposite of Joe Biden. You're an old dude, but you have a long memory.
Oh, yeah, I don't forget or forgive this kind of garbage they pull them.
Me too, bro. 100%. Homer, God bless you, bro. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. U.S. job vacancies rose 11.2 million in July despite soaring interest rates and rocketing inflation as the number of openings double available workers. You notice that? Can't get employees anywhere. Place that I go get my hair done. Yeah, I get my hair done. I get a haircut. It's called Le Grandois Clips. Okay, it's Great Clips. But anyway, go to Great Clips. And they're open part-time because they can't get enough hairdressers in there. So the increase in the government reported Tuesday will be a disappointment to the Federal Reserve, who have their heads in their rear ends. Officials are trying to cool hiring and the economy by raising short-term interest rates to try to slow borrowing and spending, which leads to inflation. What is it? It's like a Rube Goldberg way of getting to fixing the economy. This is what the Fed always does. This is what the government always does. They come up with this Rube Goldberg kind of stupid thing, and it never works. Never works. Higher pay has been passed on by many businesses to consumers in the form of higher prices, thereby intensifying inflation. Remember that thing about the de facto $15 minimum wage? Yeah, that's what happened. And now people are coming back to work, and while Walmart and Target can afford $15, small businesses, even your Dairy Queen, can't afford $15 to serve up slushies and deep fries cheese curds, which we have in the Midwest, and they're a gift from God. Last month, job openings rose in retail, warehousing, and shipping. Professional service as well. State and local education, because so many teachers are saying, I don't want to teach this crap. Number of people who quit their jobs declined slightly from 4.18 million to 4.25 because, unemployment benefits aren't where they were when Joe Biden juiced them to keep people from not working and wreck the economy. So we got that. And then next, I want to talk a little bit about millennials. Millennials are kids born, 80-something to 1996, and they're getting hit twice. And I'm going to explain this because I lived through both of them. I remember both instances where millennials, just getting out of college, really got hosed. Just really, really, really got hosed by the government. And perhaps that's why this generation is really struggling in a number of ways. I'll explain that. And then feminism out the window. A new era for women being submissive. I know it sounds really awful. That's coming up. And MAGA Hulk is next. MAGA Hulk smash. Don't go anywhere. Carson Show on a, what, it's a Wednesday already. Oh, my gosh, it's Wednesday. And joining us on the phone, you saw him a lot during the last election campaign. He is epic. He is awesome. He is Mega Hulk. And he joins us on the phone. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine. How you doing today?
You know, I'm doing well. Something I've been dying to ask you since the first time I saw you, And I'm just telling you this because I was a big kind of weightlifter earlier. Used to bench press about 350, 375, not too bad. Not too bad. I used to opening set 22 times, two plates, 235, 22 times. That was the start. Respectable, you know, respectable. Not like you.
Absolutely.
Not like you. I got to ask you. How big are the guns? I need to know the biceps. Come on, give me an idea. Because I'm puny. I'm 17, 18. I'm puny compared to you. How big?
I'm 24. I'm almost at 25. I'm trying to get there, brother. I'm trying to. The struggle is real.
All right, so the biggest suit jacket I ever got into was a 50. How about you?
Oh, goodness. I remember the last time I got a suit, I had to go to the store. They had to get the biggest suit on the rack, and they tailored that sucker down as much as they could.
You know, they did
the only thing that was able to fit.
They did the same thing to Lizzo at the MTV Awards. You know? Except for she went into an awning shop.
Oh, my God. Well, I believe it. I tell you that much. Goodness, it looks like you can go to Abercrombie and Fitch at this
you know,
point.
I don't think this is
gracious.
I don't think it's a good idea for me to call you up and ask you the first thing to compare my dimensions to yours. That's not going to end well. It's not going to end well.
You never know.
All right. So let me ask you. I want to get to know you. How'd you get on the scene? Other than just, you know, you are just imposing as hell. You are also, you know, becoming more common, a black conservative. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you arrived on the scene and how your life changed in the last couple of years.
Oh, goodness gracious. It was one of those situations because I was a liberal. You know, I was liberally minded. I had liberal ideology. And then Trump came on the scene, right? And around 2017. Towards the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, I was like, okay, let me delve into this political scene. Let me see what's going on here. And when it comes to Trump, you know, I believe in MSNBC, I believe in CNN, I believe in all the news. And I'm saying, you know, okay, when it comes to this President Trump character, I'm going to go ahead and learn all I can so I can beat these Trump supporters down with facts. I can't stand Trump. I can't stand all these things like the news said, he's a right-wing extremist.
Oh, yeah.
He's literally Hitler. He's a racist, this, that, and the third. So as I started doing my research, I started looking at his policy. I started realizing he was actually good for America as opposed to what the media was saying. So I was like, okay, there's a different perspective here. Started delving into that, realized that I'm starting to red pill myself, and then came onto the right side of history. And ever since then, I hit the ground running. And I'm not going back.
Now, this is interesting because the perception of Donald Trump among not only communities of color but others, you looked at Donald Trump as the man. I mean, not the man, like the man, but I mean, like you're the man. You're the man. You're the man. Like you're the man. Like there's a song by the Killers. He's the man. He's the man. The guy is wealthy. He's masculine. He loves women. He is a cisgendered male since birth. He's a good father. Every building that he buys, he puts his name on it. What is not to like about that?
See, and that's the thing. When it comes to Trump, well, I mean, especially before he ran for office, every single person loved the man. The black community loved him. Everybody loved him. I mean, he was on WWE, you know, and I was a big WWE fan. So when he came on WWE with the money, 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 money song, oh, that was fantastic. And who didn't love him? Who didn't love the man? But all of a sudden, when he comes down these escalators, you know, running for a Republican office, now all of a sudden, he's literally Hitler. So before he started running for office, everyone loved him. Everyone adored him. Rappers had songs about him. But all of a sudden, when he gets on the right side of history and announces he's a Republican, now all of a sudden, here comes the ire. So it's just the media sin of spin when it comes to people that they don't like. They put them in the crosshairs. They paint them as a terrible person. And, of course, people fall for it. And I was one of them.
Now, I want to ask you this as a person of color. Can I just say, you're a black guy. Okay, I'm a white guy.
Yes, indeed, please.
You're a black guy. I'm a white guy. Whatever. You know, when you look at the crisis in the African-American community in inner cities, I have been talking about this for 30 years of my career. It has been an obsession with me to help kids out, particularly in inner cities, where the murder rate is 13 times the national average, where the abortion rate is 40 to 60%. Blacks would not be a minority if they didn't abort so many babies, which, by the way, was the dream of the founder of Planned Parenthood. But, but you know, and I think you know as well as I do that the Democrat Party, they have always tried to keep black people on their plantation. I knew this when Hillary Clinton said it years ago. I said, the plantation is the Democrat Party. Do you think all of this is about Donald Trump being a threat to their power structure, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. They're always trying to make it seem like it's about Trump, but this is a referendum on the Democrat Party at large, right? You look at the Democrat Party, and yes, indeed, you are completely right. It is the Democrat plantation, right? And there's a lot of runaway slaves at this point in time because they see the Democrat plantation for what it is. It's a place where there's no hope. There's no future, and we're supposed to be reliant on big government. We're supposed to be reliant on NASA, so to speak. And when it comes to this type of situation, we're like, look, we want our freedom. So we're going to get away from this Democrat Party who wants us to kill our own kids, like you said, when it comes to abortion. Margaret Sanger, I mean, she was a big proponent of eugenics, right? Yep. She said, we didn't want the word to get out that we want to exterminate the black population, wow. Right? She said that the black community or the black people are like weeds that need to be exterminated. That's the founder of Planned Parenthood. This is what she's saying about the black community. Yeah. And yet and still, we're doing exactly that which Margaret Sanger wants by aborting our kids in record rates. It's absolutely unbelievable. Not to mention the fact that about 79% of these Planned Parenthoods are in the hood, right?
Yes,
right,
yes. Have you ever noticed? No. I know. I've been saying this for years. Every time you see an MLK Boulevard, every time you see a Malcolm X Boulevard, would you want to live on that street?
You never want to be caught dead or alive on the MLK Boulevard. A person who's stupid Pete, you don't want to be on that boulevard.
No. It's a shame. It's an insult to the man. And I'm going to tell you something else. When you say that that kids of color cannot succeed in this country because of institutional racism, you are insulting those who became the greatest figures in world history.
Yes.
Despite the fact there was at the time institutional racism from groups like the Democrat Party and the FBI. Right?
Tell the truth, shame the devil. That is so true. Whenever they're trying to talk about institutional racism or systemic racism, it is the biggest myth. That it's something I often speak out against when it comes to this subject, right? Because there's so many myths surrounding this idea of systemic racism. Oh, the man's holding me down. Oh, the man's holding me back. Oh, I can't achieve greatness because of racism and all this other type of foolishness. It's absolute utter lies, because if that's the case in the systemic racism world, quote unquote, if systemic racism is supposed to benefit white people, right, which is the whole point of systemic racism, how is it that Asians got this cheat code and we're able to surpass whites when it comes to median income?
Yeah.
We're able to surpass whites when it comes to education and as far as scholastic achievement.
And what
we're
about
able
Indians?
To surpass whites.
What about Indian Americans? Yeah, same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, it's really funny. It's really funny. Michelle Obama used to talk about inner city neighborhoods, and they called them food deserts. Food deserts.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, they're just crappy neighborhoods. The store doesn't want to be robbed blind. But you've got Indian Americans and Asian Americans frequently going into, you know, neighborhoods that are very troubled, you know, and they open their stores. And what becomes the target? What becomes the target of hate? Those who are trying to succeed in those communities and make great things happening. It really is just sickening, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's really sad to see this happening, especially when it comes to the black community, my community. So I look at the black community, especially when it comes to these inner cities. I'm like, goodness gracious, we are constantly shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
We are constantly wanting more opportunities. We're constantly wanting better opportunities. We're constantly wanting more businesses to come into the hood, so to speak. And then as soon as the business does come into the hood, we rob it, we shoot it, we gun down, there's gunplay outside in front of it, and now they want to leave. It's like, goodness gracious, this is what we're doing to our daggone selves. When are we going to wake up, smell the daggone coffee, smell the roses, and understand we are doing this to ourselves? It's not the white man. It's not systemic racism. It's not all these different things that they're trying to make it seem like. It's us. We are our own problem, and we have to fix ourselves and first admit that there is a problem within our own community before we can fix ourselves. And that's where black conservatives come in. We say, hey, look, these are issues that need to be tackled. These are issues that need to be fixed. Here's the problem. And we're excoriated. We're told that we're coons, we're Uncle Toms, we're white man's slave, white man's dog, race traitor, self-hater, the whole bit. Just because we want to fix our community, that these people want to live in this bubble, this type of cognitive dissonance, so that when it comes to us trying to promote a message of hope and trying to promote a message that's going to get us out of this this vicious cycle of violence and ridiculousness, we are looked upon, we are excoriated, we're told that we're worse than we're worse than Hitler, as a matter of fact, at this point in time.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely ridiculous. This cycle needs to be broken, and it's I don't really know what else to do other than to tell the truth. To break this cycle.
Let me ask you this. You've seen this Mar-a-Lago raid on Donald Trump, which is unprecedented. It is a jackbooted thuggery. It has never been done before. The FBI has been after Donald Trump for 7 years. And I got to tell you, MAGA Hulk, I'm just thoroughly done. I'm tired of the witch hunting. I'm tired of this nonsense. This man has taken a lot of slings and arrows for us. And by the way, I'll just go ahead and say, what happened in Mar-a-Lago is the template for what the Democrat Party wants to do to Americans with hiring 87,000 IRS agents. Yes, sir, right?
Unbelievable, as if this is what the American people want. We want more people breathing down our necks. And this is what we talk about when it comes to us, all right? We're always talking about big government. Right? The effects of big government. This is why us on the right, we want limited government. We don't want big government, because this is what happens when you have big government. You have raids on citizens within the United States of America against their political opponents, which is tantamount to, if you really look at it, this is tantamount to fascism.
Yes, sir.
Right? This is tantamount. This is what they try to say, that we're the fascists. We're those MAGA right-wing fascists, semi-fascists.
hold on just a second. Just real quick. Any Democrat in the audience who would like to walk up to MAGA Hulk and say you're a fascist? I'm looking for volunteers. Hello? Hello? Anybody?
Any takers.
No takers. No takers. I wouldn't say anything to you, but yes, sir. That's what I'd say to you.
Yes. See, it's actually funny, because I remember, especially during 2020, we were having all the Trump rallies and whatnot.
Yeah.
Antifa and BLM would constantly come up to us and call us fascists, right? Oh, you bunch of fascists, you bunch of fascists. They would say the same thing about President Trump. They would say the same thing about any right-winger who stood up for liberty and justice for all. But at the end of the day, it's like that one movie, The Princess Bride, right?
Yeah.
That one guy, Inigo Montoya, he would say, you keep using this word, I don't think it means what you think it means. And it just goes to show how inept these people are, how these people really don't understand what it is that they're saying. They're using these buzzwords. They're using all these different rhetoric that they've been told to say. They've been told to parrot when it comes to us on the right. But they don't understand what it is that they're talking about, because if they did understand it, they would understand that it's their side who are the fascists who showcase fascism.
Of course.
Their dictatorial rule.
All right. So one more question. About 60 seconds. You live in Arizona. Carrie Lake. Come on.
Yes.
Come on, Carrie Lake. Oh. She's going to win it. She's going to do it.
You better believe she's going
to do
it. Goodness gracious. She has so much steam underneath her and all of our support. It's absolutely beautiful. She's a wonderful candidate.
I wouldn't call her a fascist to her face either.
I would dare anyone to.
Okay. So you're working with TPUSA, Turning Point USA. This is great. This is Charlie Kirk's organization, right?
Yes, sir. You got it.
I think it's so great. I just think you are, first of all, you're an imposing figure. Second of all, you're a very influential person. And I just really am glad that you see the abuses and usurpations that the Democrats have done, not only to communities of color, but to Americans in general.
Got it.
I know you're on Real MAGA Hulk on Getter, Real MAGA Hulk on Truth Social. Where else can we find you, sir?
You can also find me at Stephen Davis 1776 on Instagram, as well as YouTube. And you can find me at Stephen D 1776 on Twitter as well.
And that's with a PH, by the way. One more question. How much
that's
you been? Max bench. Come on. How much? What is your max bench?
I stopped at 500. That's it. That's all I'm doing. You will not get me to do not one more pound over that.
You're going
to
need some glucosamine and chondroitin for your shoulders when you're 45.
Something like that.
All right, buddy. Have a glorious day. Let's have you on again, and I'd love to get you my TV show on Newsmax, too.
Absolutely. That would be my pleasure.
All right. Godspeed. God bless. Have a glorious weekend.
You too.
All right. That MAGA Hulk, ladies and gentlemen, on the Rob Carson Show. Back in a second.
Joe Biden has always been a punchline. Now he's just a joke. It's the Rob Carson Show.
A big thank you to MAGA Hulk. His name is Stephen Davis, by the way. I said to him off air, I said, should I call you MAGA Hulk or Stephen Davis? He goes, either one, I don't care. He used to live in L.A. He moved to Arizona. What he said in that interview was incredible. And I'm just so glad that he is who he is, and he has had this this realization of what the Democrat Party has done to communities of color throughout its entire history, starting with slavery. Republicans were founded originally as an anti-slavery party. That was revolutionary back in the 1850s. And the Democrat Party, it's just, I don't know how, I don't know why. I know that the Republicans had a lot of members of black members in Congress back in the 1800s. And, you know, Jim Crow rolled around. The Democrats were in charge of that. Great Society destroyed the black family, blah, 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 Planned Parenthood, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. So I'm hoping that just for, and I mean this, for goodness sake. You hear that? You hear that expression? For goodness. For goodness sake. Oh, my goodness. For goodness sake. But for goodness sake, the Democrat Party has to be taken down and reinvented or left in the dustbin of history. And as with the FBI shouting, oh, yeah. They had a resolute desk in Mar-a-Lago, and it's filled with documents. And here, look at all these documents that are on the ground. And it's all a distraction. It's all nonsense. It's like, oh, have you seen any polls about the polls tightening with regard to the November election the last couple days? Last week, even Fox News, it was, oh, yeah, it looks like they're going to hold on. They're going to hold on to Senate, and then they're gonna probably only going to get about 8 House seats. And then you realize all the ways that Joe Biden is creating an SH show. And it would be illogical to think that the American people want some more of that. Solid majority of Americans think we're in a recession, but the consensus conceals some deep divides in the economy. Most recent poll from The Economist and YouGov found 58% of Americans say we're in a recession. We are. I mean, a textbook definition, but the Biden administration, of course, changed the definition because, you know, they're Stalinists. Men are slightly more likely than women to say we're in a recession. 59% to 57%, 51% majority of blacks say we're in a recession. 98% of black people voted for Barack Obama twice? 27% saying we're not, and 22% saying they're not sure. Among Hispanics, 53% say they're in a recession. The train is coming down the bend. No amount of shouting is going to stop it. No amount of shouting is going to stop it. Now, I'm going to get into millennials with regard to the job and how their generation has really been hit twice, and it was out of their control. And then I want to talk about this new movement in the country affirming masculinity and femininity after decades of feminizing our culture. That's coming up. The phone number, if you want to chime in, 800-922-6680. This, my friends, is The Rob Carson Show.
They called us deplorables. We're not gonna take it. They shut down our country. No, we ain't gonna take it. They say our thoughts are disinformation. This is our response, The Rob Carson Show.
Last hour of The Rob Carson Show, right ahead as the SS Titanic is taking on water, as the rats are scurrying from the ship, and there is no room on the door for Democrats unless they come over and say, you know, we were wrong, and, you know, we're sorry what we did and everything, but they won't do that. So go down with the ship, will ya? By the way, if you want to check out the podcast of the show, a lot of people, they have podcasts. And, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, my son listens to these Gen Z millennial movie podcasts, and they're pretty cool. Like one week it'll be about Sam Raimi and all this. That's the way he listens to. My podcast is the show, but we tighten it up. It's 2 hours long. It's about an hour shorter than the show. And you can download it wherever. You can subscribe, and you can share it with others. There's a lot of momentum. And as we add affiliates to the lineup, and we are, certainly KVI Seattle last week, the latest. So we're on a KVI in Seattle, and they're doing a weekend show. They want to dip their toe into it. Then they'll see how it just destroys in the ratings. It's been really, really good in all of our markets. And so if you want to listen to the podcast, it's just called the Rob Carson Show Podcast. And it's on all the digital platforms. If you're on the Apple Podcast, just write a 5-star review if you would, because all of my relatives have already chimed in. You know, so we need people who, you know. So anyway, check it out there. Spotify, all of these. And then if you just want a whole list, a compendium of all of them, just go to NewsmaxTV.com/podcast. NewsmaxTV.com/podcast. Okay, will you do that? I want to acknowledge somebody. Some people in broadcast, don't mention your competition. Don't say, because they will tune over there. You can't talk about B98.7 with the breakfast flakes in the morning, because they'll tune over there. Well, you know, program directors who say that are morons. That's why I don't work for music radio anymore. Not saying all music radio program directors are morons, but some of them are. So, you know, when I say, Greg Gutfeld. I'm going to acknowledge Greg Gutfeld. Is he my competition? Not really. I mean, he's on weeknights. I'm on my shows on the weekends right now and on Monday morning when Donald Trump listens to it or watches it on Newsmax. He's the king of late night. Greg Gutfeld. And he's had a long road. He did that Red Eye and all that. And I want to congratulate Greg Gutfeld because he's funny as hell. He has a great cast on there. And I just enjoy the show. And he is beating late night. You know why? Because late night is an insult to those who came before. It is an insult to Johnny Carson. It is an insult to Steve Allen. For those of you who don't know, Jack Parr was the original like late night talk show host. And Johnny Carson, and yes, he took over, yes, with Ed McMahon. And Arsenio, I thought Arsenio did a hell of a good job, too, by the way. I thought Arsenio was awesome. And then also, who the hell? I thought Leno did a nice job. And to some degree, I think that Kimmel's pretty funny. In fact, he's really talented. But Stephen Colbert's a tool. And so is Jimmy Fallon, or Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel, you know, and they are sucking wind as far as the ratings because... Like Stephen Colbert, just tell some jokes and have a band on and have some actors on. That's the way it is. And you can have a politician on, but get something out of it that isn't just reinforcing your leftism. You know, talk about something else. Well, I'm glad for Greg Gutfeld, averaging 2.19 million viewers compared to the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, which is 2.15 million. And then the other two, they fight for the crumbs. So I want to congratulate him. Isn't it funny how conservative comedy tends to resonate? It's almost weird. Kind of weird. Yeah. So the government is saying we're not in a recession. I don't know about you, but I think we're in a recession. I'm very fortunate because if this would have happened, this economic malaise would have happened 2 years ago, I don't know what would have happened with my family. Because we saw the highs and the lows. I lost a job, lost a house, moved around for radio, moved my entire family for a radio station. They decided that I was too expensive, so they fired me 2 years into a 3-year deal with my family, moved here, so I was out of radio, nearly lost my family. My wife was going to leave, and I said, screw it, what am I going to do? My wife said, sell bleeping cars. So I said, okay. And then I said, behind my back, her back, I'm going to win her back. I'm going to sell the most cars that they ever even dreamed of. And I did. And we bought a house. But, you know, things are tough. And I got to tell you, I do feel some sympathy toward the millennials. Now, the millennials are the Generation X is the last analog generation. I'll just say that. We're the ones who ushered in things like the Walkman, things like cable television, things like VCRs, and then cell phones. We were the first generation to have those, and also to not have those. the last generation to not have them, first generation to have them. And we kind of, you know, we went to college, we got out of college, we went to work, we had children, we did all this, and nobody really paid attention to Gen X. But we did. We changed the world quietly. We changed music. And a whole lot more. And then millennials came along and they decided to focus on millennials. And millennials aren't necessarily the children of Generation X. because, you know, I'm 56 and the oldest millennials are about 44. And I think it'd be kind of hard for me to have a child who's 44 years old unless I lived in Arkansas. It's a joke. It's just a joke. But millennials, they've gotten poorer since the last recession. While other age groups have become wealthier, the National Bureau of Economic Research reports that millennials' average wealth was lower than any generation. Yeah. And then, of course, and I remember when this happened. I was in Washington, D.C. The 2007 Great Recession was when millennials were really starting to get out of college. And as soon as they get out, they have massive debt and they had the recession of 2007 and wages plummeted. Like just a few years earlier, kids were getting out of college making $60,000, $70,000 a year. And at that time, hella money. But that happened. And then the millennials, they started, you know, they picked themselves up, they dust themselves off, and then they rolled around to COVID and COVID restrictions and shutting down businesses. And I'm sure that hundreds of thousands of millennials lost their jobs and businesses. So they've kind of been, I mean, honestly, they've been slapped around. They really have. And I will also say this about millennials. Millennials have the unfortunate designation of being the first generation to be the progeny of the class of 1968. They're the first generation that have gone through their entire childhood with leftist indoctrination in schools and leftist indoctrination in the media. That is intensified as millennials reach their earning years. So long came this kneeling during the national anthem. Long came this, you know, all this nonsense. And then the riots of 2020, all that crap. And, Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And then, of course, COVID shutdowns, which really screwed them. And so I give millennials a break on that front. Because it's been a tough road to hoe for millennials. That said, there are no excuses for failure. If you have your wits about you, if you have the ability to create and invent, and if you have the ability and you have the drive within you to be the best that you can, there's no excuse for your generation. That's like saying that, the society is institutionally racist, so kids of color can't make it. I'm not making an excuse for millennials, but I understand it's a tough road to hoe. It really is. And I'm not ready to give up on millennials. But there's something happening with the following generation that I find to be quite interesting. And those are Gen Z. Now, my son was born in 1999. My daughter was born in 2005. My son says he's a millennial. Now, maybe a cusp. But he was, you know, millennials, the cutoff was 1996. But there is a movement in the country with regard to this rejection of all this gender nonsense. And you think that everybody's down with it, and you think that everybody is cool with men being feminized, and you think it's cool that, feminism has created this culture that allows men to become so feminized that they identify as women and compete with women. And men have become so feminized that they're, you know, gender questioning and all of these other things. And this isn't flying. I think we're beginning to see a change with Gen Z. And I saw this headline, and I think it's interesting. And the reason why I bring this up, I got a 17-year-old daughter. And my daughter has just celebrated her one-year anniversary with her boyfriend. And he's 17 as well. And he's a Christian. And he doesn't drink. And he volunteers at church. And he goes to church on Sunday. And he takes my daughter to church with him. And he goes to church during the week. And I'm not a good churchgoer. I have strong beliefs. Yes, yes, yes. I've tried to share them with my children. But I'm just not a big churchgoer. I was raised Catholic. I take the kids on the holidays. And I go by myself sometimes, you know. But I'm not a big church dude. Nothing against, do go to church, and maybe I will go back to the church. I'll go back to the Catholic Church because I like the Catholic Church. But I'm a Christian, and every day I sign the cross. I get up and I go, thank God she's still with him, and they're both still the same gender. And my daughter embraces her femininity. She likes to dress. She likes her nails to be long. She likes her hair to be this. And she loves being the woman in the relationship with him. And he loves being the man. Now, they have a give and take. He doesn't boss her around, but he does open the door for her. He opens the door for her, the car and the house. Now, if you think if you know, she is Gen Z, the second generation to go through all this indoctrination at school, that she would be, you know, wearing, ear gauges and smelling like patchouli and body odor and pot. But she's not. She's not. And the Tinder culture and all this is showing Gen Z that the millennials really got hosed and really did some things they don't want to be associated with. I'm going to share some interesting things, including a movement online for women to assert their submissiveness. I know that sounds weird, but I'm going to explain that. And then also we got a guy named Andrew Tate, who is very pro-man, very masculine, very pro-traditional roles. And he's being called a hater and a misogynist, and he's being banned on social media. Why? Is he a Nazi? No. Are terrorists in Iran being banned from social media? No. Why is he a threat? I'll get to this and get your thoughts as well. 800-922-6680. This is The Rob Carson Show.
To a record-setting president. Joe Biden setting record low approval ratings.
What the Democrats have put our nation through. It is a sad day.
It's the Rob Carson Show.
Come on! New bumper music. I choose all the bumper music. That's pretty good. So my daughter's 17 years old. She's been dating a young man who is a Christian, keeps his hair short, doesn't do weed, doesn't smoke pot, doesn't drink, doesn't curse. They enjoy each other. They just enjoy their company. And about that, too. No, not doing that either. And we've had conversations about this. And I think the glorious thing is that my daughter is... like I try to get her to get a job. Get a job. You need a job. She's done a few things, but she hadn't really had a full-time job or anything, you know, during the summer. And she's not particularly concerned about career. She will do something. She's an artist. She's brilliant. But she's not radical feminist, anything like that. She likes being a young woman, and she likes her boyfriend, who is a kind and good and masculine young man. Here's a headline from the weekly, UK Daily Mail, Louise Perry. Why Tinder is toxic for young women. 10 years after its launch, the sweep right dating app's promise of sexual liberation is working for a minority of lascivious men. But the downsides are legion. Sexual revolution was supposed to set us free. No more shame, no more coercion, no more female subservience. We were told that a new culture of no string sex attached would give women the opportunity to revel in their sexual autonomy. Make no mistake, Tinder has led to a radical and unwelcome change in our sexual culture, a change that I believe is toxic for women, for younger women in particular. Today's sexual culture is destructive, divorcing love and commitment from sex and favoring one-night stands. Dating apps such as Tinder turn people into products in a sexual marketplace that encourages users to browse the available merchandise, select their preferred options from the comfort of their homes with very little effort and no intimacy whatsoever. One male user, listen, girls, describe the voracious sexual appetite that the apps encourage. Quote, you're always prowling. In a bar, you might have two or three girls to choose from. But online, you could swipe a couple hundred a day and set up two or three Tinder dates a week. And chances are, sleep with all of them. You could rack up 100 girls you slept with in a year. This is a video that's going viral on modern feminism. This is a young woman. She's around 19 years old, talking about how things are changing.
Feminism is a scam. A few years ago, I was an angry, blue-haired feminist. I once believed that male privilege was real and that I was a victim of the wage gap. Now that I understand the true motives of...
No, it's not a wage gap. Teachers make less money and women migrate towards teaching and nursing and things like that, not working high-rise buildings and welding and stuff like that.
Feminism. I know that this could not be further from the truth, and that modern-day feminism is a war on true masculinity. Before women had the right to vote, most were stay-at-home wives, which meant they weren't working jobs and couldn't be taxed.
Yeah, but they're doing the most important job ever.
Our overlords didn't like that. Rockefeller started funding feminist campaigns in media, and as a consequence of the movement, women started entering the workforce and leaving the home. Children
and a lot of companies now are paying for women's abortions, paying for their travel because they don't want them taking time off to raise a child.
Children would then be separated from their parents and sent to Rockefeller-funded schools to be indoctrinated by the state. All of this ultimately disrupting the family unit at its core. Feminism is defined...
Yeah, we kind of have seen that during the destruction of the family thing.
It's the belief in social, economic, and political equality of the sexes. But in the West, I must ask, what rights do men have that women don't? Modern feminists are convincing women that hookup culture, using hormonal birth control, and not shaving is liberation. That toxic...
Oh, those hairy armpits. That's so... I was going to say hot, but I want to throw up.
Masculinity is prevalent, and the patriarchy must be dismantled. Through movies and media, we're taught that working for the man, climbing the corporate ladder, and paying tax is more empowering and valuable than raising the next generation. Women have lost touch with our natural loving instincts, and birth rates are plummeting. Men and women are not the same. And by protesting for equality of...
That's not what our new Supreme Court justice says.
...outcome, rather than opportunity, feminists are demonizing and emasculating men.
And there's this thing going on about female submissiveness. Listen to this.
What does a submissive woman do for her man?
Everything.
What does that mean?
You know, like packing his bag, unpacking his bag, just making sure all the things that he wants. And like, I pretty much read his mind. So it's like, if I know you.
I sent this video to my wife yesterday. She didn't respond.
And I study you. Like, I know how you are in the morning. I know how you are about midday. I know when you're in this mood, what you need. Like, before you can ever ask me for something, I'm already on it. I mean, he's spoiled. And, you know, when I talk to my girlfriends about it, I was like, oh, how are you guys doing? And I'm just like, girl, he's rotten. I'm like, he's spoiled rotten. Like, he's rotten. But I love that. Like, I want him to be that. I think my biggest flex is how I treat my man.
Okay. Now, as far as female submission is concerned, I'm not down with calling it submission. But what I'm taking from this is that there is nothing wrong with the traditional male and female roles, or at least there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with mom wanting to just raise kids, not just mom raising kids. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. She also worked. She was a beautician. She ran apartments. But she also was the most powerful and influential person I ever met in my life. And that includes Donald Trump. Nothing against Donald Trump. He's a glorious man. But in my life, my mom was. A little bit more on this. And then EVs are a joke in California. And Biden's Border Patrol chief says that Biden is wrecking the border. And he's tired of it. All right, so coming up, California. California is mandating electric cars. And now they're getting ready to go through rolling blackouts because, you know, they got rid of all the fossil fuel. And they literally trying to keep desperately this this nuclear power plant still online, the only one in California, because the coming warm weather, which happens in summer, by the way. And so they're asking people not to plug in their electric cars during peak hours, which means that if you have to go to the hospital or you have to get out of town, if there's a national emergency with an electric car, you're screwed. You're completely screwed. Unless you have a generator that runs on fossil fuel in your house or beside your house. So anyway, that's coming. Also, Biden's Border Patrol chief says that there are no consequences for entering the border illegally. He's not happy about it. He said it under oath. We'll get to that. I've been talking about women, young women, and young men. Men have been, and I've been talking about the feminization of the culture. I used to call it the Oprahization of the culture. And I do some things that are traditionally not so male. I like to cook. I do all the cooking in the house. I enjoy it. It's just something I do. I also like to do home improvement. I've got every tool known to mankind. I do that. But, you know, I like to make sure when my wife comes home, I have dinner ready for her. I like to make sure that she has a coffee in the morning. I make her lunch every day. You know why? You know, you heard that just a minute ago, the woman who's the submissive, whatever. No, it's about making the person who's going to spend your freaking life with you happy. And I've been on the other side of that where I've not made her happy. And if she's willing to give you a contract that says, I'm going to stay with your sorry ass for your life, I'd take her up on it. I mean that. Because honestly, when it's all said and done, the only thing that matters when you leave this planet is the people you love or the people who love you. That's it. Excuse me. That's all that matters. Not your new car, not your jet, not your this, not your that. All that matters is that person who loves you or those people that love you. It's wonderful. It's glorious. It is riches beyond your wildest dream that you cannot buy with, you know, being a YouTuber, making millions of dollars, shaking your butt on camera. Not going to make you any happier. That's why so many of them are unhappy and needy and awful. So many women in their 50s, when they're fading in Hollywood, get a OnlyFans page. That's going to make you happy. There's this guy named Andrew Tate, and he has been banned from everything, social media, whatever. He's got a huge following. He's a very wealthy man. And I've been, you know, hearing about him. He was banned from everything. He even had his bank account shut down and everything. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And a lot of young men like him. Now, some of the things he says, I've heard are very misogynistic. I don't agree with all of them, but some of his words of inspiration are directed at young men because so many young men have been told they're crap and that their masculinity is toxic and all this garbage. And here is what he had to say about the state of manhood. And this is why so many young men, this guy resonates with them.
I think the reason a lot of men are so depressed is because they feel invisible. They feel like the life is too hard. Women expect me to be strong and smart and funny and interesting with a nice apartment and a fast car and tall and well-connected and funny. And it's just too much for them to handle. And the social pressure on men is absolutely immense.
What happens if you got a 2005 Camry? You see what I'm doing here? It's not just about, you know, obviously body image for women. What about all this other stuff?
And I was
for men
championing their issues. And at the same time, all these social media platforms pretend to care. As soon as somebody they resonate with stands up and champions their issues, they mass blanket ban me, which shows they have absolutely no care for the young men of the world today. They don't want to read. They don't want to see transgender people wear makeup. They don't want to see that. They want to see a man.
Doesn't mean they hate them. It's just they're not into that.
And who has a bunch of money and a nice life and some fast cars and is strong and is confident. They want an action hero. And that's something that large portions of the world still want to be.
Yeah. A lot of young men want to be that way. Here's a little bit more from Andrew Tate.
They're not really interested in men's issues. And there's a lot of young men growing up today that feel very disaffected. They feel invisible.
Yeah.
The agendas that are being forced down their throats are not agendas they align with or they feel affinity to or agendas they want.
Or like traditional female gender roles, radical leftists and feminists shame them for choosing that way of life. The same goes with men who want to assert their masculinity, be strong, be the breadwinner, be physically fit, mentally fit, be a leader, all of these things. The feminization of the culture doesn't allow it.
And I basically just say to men, look, it's a very hard life.
Yes.
You're going to need to get up, work hard.
Yes.
Go to the gym. Strong body is a strong mind.
Yep.
You're going to have to reject listening blindly to everything you're told. Reject the slave mind. Think for yourself. Get a strong network of brothers. Work aside them. Don't tolerate low-quality people.
This is pretty interesting right here.
Your life, which means don't tolerate men who just smoke drugs and play video games, or men who are disloyal or dishonest. By extension, don't tolerate women or girlfriends who are disloyal or dishonest, and try and build and create a reality full of high-quality people in which you can resist the programming that the Matrix tries to influence you with, and grow up truly happy. And
My somebody close to me said when I talked about Andrew Tate yesterday that I said, well, I don't agree with everything he says. And this person said, well, you know, Hitler, he said a lot of things that some people would take it out of context and say is all right. And I said, you know what? The conversation's over. When you go to Hitler, honestly, you're done. The conversation is over. That is a mentally weak argument. It's like moral relativity. Well, you know, Hitler said some good things, but you know, well, no. This Andrew Tate, he's never said, hey, let's have a final solution where we kill all the Jews. Shush, nonsense. My jury is still out on Andrew Tate. I have a feeling whenever somebody is banned from social media while terrorists are still able to stay on social media, why people like Hunter Biden and Joe Biden are still on social media, while scumbags are still on social media, where different groups are still on social media, Black Lives Matter, it's a terrorist organization, it's corrupt as hell, then, you know, when somebody gets banned or shut down, that's when I go into defense mode and go, huh, maybe what he's saying is right. And it's empowering young men. Nothing wrong with being a feminine woman and a masculine man. Nothing wrong with being a feminine man and a masculine woman. But this whole intolerance with regard to traditional values or gender roles is really, honestly, stop it. Stop the nonsense. All you're doing is creating unhappiness. Tinder didn't make women happier. It made them... It made them targets of men who think that if they sweep right, they can have sex with a whole lot of them. And I guess some women find that desirable. They want to be that desirable to men. Well, I got to tell you, most women, you know, of a certain age can walk into any bar and get a piece of action. You know, a little harder slog for guys a lot of times. But anyway, just some thoughts. California is going to suffer an energy shortage and the flex alerts through Labor Day due to high temperatures because, you know, this happens in the summer. Residents will be asked to conserve electricity during afternoons and evenings, which means refraining from charging your electric car. Now, if the electric grid is shut down, you could still fill your gas car with gas and you could still drive. But there you go. That's what they're saying. Hold off on charging your electric vehicles, which means if there's a big old earthquake, if the San Andreas finally goes and your car's not charged, you're screwed. And then there's this, replacing the battery on your car. This is the story of a guy who got one of those nifty, Chevy Volts. And this is what happens when the dealership told him he needed a new battery.
Now, that estimate from Roger Dean went out on social media, and today they confirmed that it was true, but explained because that model was 12 years old and the warranty was out of date, that's the reason for the $26,000 quote to replace the battery.
$26,000 to replace the battery, all told with tax and labor, $29,842 for the battery.
I've definitely seen expensive electric vehicle fixes of the same caliber.
Nearly $30,000 for battery replacement when you add labor. Today, the Roger Dean Chevrolet dealership confirmed that this cost estimate to replace a Chevy Volt battery is real. It's not something...
Or you could just buy a new gas Camry.
...electric car owners plan on down the road.
$30,000 is a lot to fix anything on a car, especially...
You can replace the engine for six. You know, if you get one rebuilt, probably even less.
When the car itself could be worth like less than that.
The dealership declined an interview, but on Facebook explained that the Volt, a discontinued hybrid, was out of warranty.
In other words, your Volt is a piece of crap.
Making finding replacement parts difficult and expensive.
As far as like electric cars go, they're getting made in better ways now.
At a Fort Myers charging station, we met up with Ian, who's leasing the Bolt, a fully electric model.
Literally, getting a new Bolt, like the 2023 Bolt, is...
And because you got a Bolt, you're adult.
And that's a full electric car, is like, I think, 26,000 new or something.
Yeah, you just buy a new car. Now, by the way, it generally, if you're going to replace the battery, the cost of replacing an EV battery can still exceed $20,000 for some models when labor and costs are calculated. Thought you should know. By the way, the White House appears to have convinced Congress to spend more money on electric vehicles. We know this. But it looks like American ain't buying it. Many Americans still see electric vehicles inefficient, awkward to charge, expensive, largely owned by coastal elites. And they would be right. They would be right. The belief that electric cars, like those made by Tesla, are best for elites in big cities is driven in part by the lack of chargers in many places, including West Virginia, and the fact that they cost $67,000 on average. Here's what I predict, and I don't want to come down on people who are driving EVs. I get it. Okay, you've got an EV. Cool. Maybe you got suckered into it. I don't know. Maybe you just drive in a Starbucks. Maybe you're, you know, like I like to say, EV owners are largely posers. A lot of them are. Not all of you. Not all of you. But if you buy an F-150 Lightning and you expect to do anything with it, like haul stuff, you're a fool. It's not going to happen. If you drive around and you you virtue signal driving your electric car, and some of them are pretty sharp looking, and I'll give you that. I mean, the SUV from Tesla with the gold wing doors, pretty cool looking. If you're just driving around, showing off your car. But otherwise, as far as being a workhorse for you, no. Car companies should have gone with hybrids. That would have been the smart thing to do. I don't think anybody's afraid to have a hybrid. Hybrids can be very glorious. Hybrids require a lot less rare earth minerals and pollution. Doesn't have to all come from China. And you've got a gas engine, too. You could do a plug-in hybrid, too. On paper, you like a new hybrid plug-in. Some of these models can get a Prius. You get 160 miles per gallon. Did you know that? 160 miles a gallon? Because you can drive it 40 miles, then the gas engine kicks on. And if you're a commuter car, you don't need to fill your car, because if you're only driving 20 miles to work, plugging your car in, then you're just going to use the electric motor. But if you're on a long trip, you're going to get 600, 700 miles out of that tank. Would have made sense. And that's why I predict, and you can write it down, I do believe within the next 5 years, your EV will be worthless. And most people who have one, who down the road suddenly get a bill for $20,000 to replace the battery, will opt to trade the car, and they'll get nothing for it as they trade their car in. Just my thoughts. As worthless as cash for clunkers. But enjoy them if you got them. Just be ready for the day of reckoning. One more break coming up here. I want to definitely share some audio from Biden's Border Patrol chief under oath about what Joe Biden and his administration have done to illegal immigration in the country. We'll do that next on the Rob Carson Show.
In the 60s, we had LBJ. Now we have FJB. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is Rob Carson Show. So Biden's Border Patrol chief, this is according to the UK Daily Mail, warns illegal immigration is increasing because there are no consequences and the surge will only get worse. Now, he had to appear. He appeared for a deposition July 28th of this year as part of a discovery in Florida. AG Ashley Moody's lawsuit against the DHS and border agencies that fall under its purview. So he's under oath, so he has the truth. He tells the truth. He's not having to repeat any agency talking points, which he's probably forced to do. And I want you to listen to this man, because his name is Raul Ortiz, and here he is telling the truth about what Joe Biden has done to the border. I'm going to do my very best to not interrupt.
What capacity do you serve the Border Patrol now?
I'm the chief of the United States Border Patrol.
Would you agree, Chief Ortiz, that the southern border is currently in crisis?
Objection. Yes.
Would you agree, Chief Ortiz, that unprecedented numbers of aliens are illegally entering the United States right now?
Objection. Yes.
Are the individuals that are turning themselves in, are they turning themselves in because they believe they're going to be paroled?
Objection. I would imagine that they're turning themselves in because they think they're going to be released, yes.
Would you agree, Chief Ortiz, that the aliens who cite favorable immigration policy as a reason to come to the United States are perceiving what actually is happening in the United States?
Huh. Objection. Yes.
Whoa. When President Biden was elected, did the number of aliens trying to illegally enter the United States increase or decrease?
Objection. Increase.
From your 31 years of experience.
Every objection from the government lawyer is the truth.
Experience. Has the Border Patrol in a year ever had the number of encounters that it's going to have in 2022?
Objection. No.
Is the crisis that is currently ongoing at the southern border, making the border less safe for Americans and aliens alike?
Objection.
Yes.
Wow.
Since President Biden was elected, does this document indicate that aliens illegally entering the United States perceive that they will be able to enter and remain in the United States?
Objection.
Yes.
Wow.
Why is it important to detain and remove demographics that are amenable to the Border Patrol?
One, you want to make sure you have consequences.
Yes.
Okay. And if you don't have consequences, what is likely going to happen?
Objection.
In my experience, we have seen increases when there are no consequences.
Okay. So if migrant populations believe that there are not going to be consequences, more of them will come to the border. Is that what you're saying?
Objection.
There's an assumption that if migrant populations are told that there's a potential that they may be released, that yes, you can see increases.
If you're not detaining and removing demographics that are amenable, and the flow will compound, so it will increase at an exponential rate, is that what is being suggested here?
Objection.
Well, I do think it will increase, yeah.
Hell is coming, and we're coming with it. And it's going to arrive on November the 8th. Let's take a break, come back, and wrap things up. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show. More new bumper music. I'm sorry. The music that you heard on the show, that's generally what I have on the Spotify account. because I like new music. I like stuff that's, fresh, masculine at times. You know, not necessarily all masculine, but, you know, I like new music. Kind of crazy. That's going to do it for the show today. But I want to thank you for joining me. And if you get a chance to check out the podcast, I would really appreciate it. It's called The Rob Carson Show Podcast. And share it with others. We're growing nationally. And if you enjoy the show, and I think a lot of you are, please share it with others. You guys in Baltimore, I got a new billboard. We got a new billboard in Baltimore. If you see it, take a snapshot and send it to me. Here's the official email until we change it, rcarson@newsmax.com, which sounds like something, you know, your inner office email. We should come up with a little sexier version of it. Maybe like Sexy Carson at Newsmax. Well, no, actually, no, I wouldn't do it. rcarson@newsmax. Guys, God bless you. Thanks for listening. Check out the podcast. God bless the unborn, our military, and of course you. And until tomorrow, which is Thursday, do not catch the stupid. See you then.